Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding your specific information. The name of this show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. Let's first look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From Peter Goodman and Jack Healy of the New York Times, this is an article regarding job losses pushing safer mortgages to foreclosure. In the latest phase of the nation's real estate disaster, the locus of trouble has shifted from subprime loans to the far more numerous prime loans issued to those with decent financial histories. From November to February, the number of prime mortgages that were delinquent at least 90 days were in foreclosure or had deteriorated to the point that the lender took possession of the home increased more than 473,000, exceeding 1.5 million, according to the New York Times analysis of data provided by the First American CoreLogic, a real estate research group. Those loans totaled more than $224 billion. During the same period, subprime mortgages in those three categories increased by fewer than 14,000, reaching 1.65 million. The number of similarly troubled Alt-A loans, those given to people with slightly tainted credit, rose 159,000 to 836,000 foreclosures. Overall, more than 4 million loans worth $717 billion were in the three distressed categories in February, a jump of more than 60% in dollar terms compared with a year earlier. With many economists anticipating the unemployment rate will rise into the double digits from its current 8.9%, foreclosures are expected to accelerate. That could exacerbate bank losses, adding pressure to the financial system and the broader economy. We're about to have a big problem, said Morris A. Davis, a real estate expert at the University of Wisconsin. Foreclosures were bad last year. It's going to get worse. Economists refer to the current stage of foreclosures as the third wave, distinct from the initial spike when speculators gave up property because of plunging real estate prices, and the secondary shock when borrowers' introductory interest rates expired and were reset higher. Mark Zandi, the chief economist at MoodysEconomy.com, said, "We're right in the middle of this third wave, and it's intensifying. That loss of jobs and loss of overtime hours and being forced from a full-time to a part-time job is resulting in defaults. They're coast to coast. Those sliding into foreclosure today are more likely to be modest borrowers whose loans fit their income than the consumers of exotically lenient mortgages that formerly typified the crisis. Economy.com expects that 60% of the mortgage defaults this year will be set off primarily by unemployment, up from 29% last year. Robert and Kay Richards live in the center of this trend. In 2006, they took a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, a prime loan, borrowing $172,000 to buy a prefabricated house. They erected the building on land they owned in the northern Minnesota town of Babbitt, clearing the terrain of pine trees with their own hands. Mr. Richards worked as a truck driver hauling timber from a nearby mill. His wife oversaw the books. Together, they brought in about $70,000 a year, enough to make their monthly mortgage payments of $1,300 while raising their two boys, now 11 and 16. But their truck driving business collapsed last year when the mill closed. Mr. Richards has since worked occasional stints for local trucking companies. His wife has failed to find clerical work. Every month that goes by, you get a little further behind, Mr. Richard said. Last June, they missed their first payment, and they have since slipped $10,000 in arrears. They are trying to persuade their bank to cut their payment ahead of a foreclosure sale. Under a program announced in February by the Obama administration, the government is to spend $75 billion on incentives for mortgage servicing companies that reduce payments for troubled homeowners. The Treasury Department says the program will spare as many as 4 million homeowners from foreclosure. But 3 months after the program was announced, a Treasury spokeswoman, Jenny Engebretson, estimated the number of loans that have been modified at more than 10,000, but fewer than 55,000. In the first 2 months of this year alone, another 313,000 mortgages landed in the foreclosure queue or became delinquent at least 90 days, according to First American CoreLogic. And according to Alan Ruskin, chief international strategist at RBS Greenwich Capital, he said, "I don't think there's any chance of government measures making more than a small dent." So that was an article by Peter Goodman and Jack Keeley of the New York Times. Next, I'd like to talk about a story from AP Online about a woman whose home was taken from her for about $1. The woman was named Ms. Taylor, who owned a home in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and she had trouble making one payment on that home. So she went to Family First Mortgage Corporation in Fayetteville, and she spoke to the branch manager and the operations manager. She was informed that she had slow credit and it would take a while before she could refinance the home. She was also told that her ex-husband would have to be able to come to an agreement to quit claim himself off the property. A short time later, the manager named Ms. Steele contacted Ms. Taylor and told her that she could help her. She told Ms. Taylor that her fiancé, Jonathan Plunk, who is a soldier at Fort Bragg, would buy the home from her, and in 6 to 8 months, they would sell the house back to her at $76,000. Ms. Taylor owed about $54,000 at that time, and Ms. Taylor agreed. Ms. Steele did all the paperwork along with the other manager, and they contacted Ms. Taylor's ex-husband in California and offered him $2,000 to be off the deed. He agreed. It turns out that Family First Mortgage was no longer in business. Ms. Steele had to surrender her license to the State Banking Commission due to criminal acts against the MLA, and both she and the other manager were involved in a lawsuit brought by 8 plaintiffs claiming loan fraud. Ms. Steele was not allowed to engage in any kind of mortgage activities, being that she was barred forever by the state of North Carolina. She was also in the process of being investigated by the Secretary of State Notary Enforcement regarding her notary license, and the other manager also let his loan officer license expire. It's noteworthy that Ms. Steele had gone ahead and notarized a quick claim deed for Mr. Taylor, who in the document she claimed personally appeared before her, although that was not true. Now, the promise to Ms. Taylor was an oral contract that Jonathan Plunk and Ms. Steele would sell the house back to her within 6 to 8 months. Within 2 weeks after they stated this to Ms. Taylor, they went and refinanced the house in the amount of $99,000 with City Financial Mortgage. Mr. Plunk and Ms. Steele then proceeded to let the home go to foreclosure. Also, the 2008 taxes during which this all happened were unpaid, so there is an action pending with the tax administration of the county. In this particular case, in investigating Ms. Steele, it seems that she had done the same thing with homes she had purchased herself. She has had 7 properties go to foreclosure after refinancing, pulling out the money, and then letting them go. Unfortunately for Ms. Taylor, the quitclaim deed of $1 gave the property to Mr. Plunk and his now wife, Ms. Steele, and they are evicting Ms. Taylor, and she must be out by June 2nd of this year. Ms. Taylor works several jobs and barely gets by. She is from Germany and had worked hard to have her home, and now it has been stolen from her for $1. So the lesson here is be very careful about mortgage rescue programs. There are many scams across the country, and people do walk away with other people's homes. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now I'd like to continue with some learning points for this week. Last week we looked at financial CPR, and this week we'll continue that and give yourself some backup plans when things don't go well. I like to start with my credit. The thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tiagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. And I highly recommend two of their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. And last week we started the concept of the financial CPR and how to protect yourself when, as I said, things get really tough. Having gone through our program for quite a long time, and if you followed the setup to put yourself on a track for a lifetime of more financial comfort and get together a plan to bring your money into balance with a security fund within that plan and moving toward a future that will be much more secure financially. Even with that, we know that sometimes things just don't go according to plan, even when you're doing your very best to put all the pieces together. Just like a puzzle, sometimes it seems like a piece is missing. Perhaps you got laid off and it takes a while to find another job, or perhaps someone got sick in the family, or there was a relationship issue, including, hopefully not, but possibly a divorce. Or maybe if you had a business partner, the business partner skips town. There's an innumerable number of possible unhappy conditions that we find ourselves in. As I said last week, there are bad things that can happen to good people, and times when it seems like you really just can't catch a break. So the point is to know some financial CPR. And even though we hope you never have to use CPR, it's good to have that knowledge just in case. It's good to know even somewhere in the back of your mind that if things ever go really wrong, you are ready to handle whatever life throws your way. You have a plan, a real plan, a plan for the good times, which you've been going over for quite a while, and a plan for the bad times, which is really taken together, a plan for life. So CPR financially is really an emergency backup plan. And like in physical CPR, the most important step in saving someone is to prepare for an emergency before one arises. So you have to know how to recognize the danger signs, learn the steps, and run through some practical drills. There, frankly, is no time generally to get out the instruction manual when a problem happens physically, and the same really is true to a degree when a problem is happening financially. That's a big problem. You need to create a strategy for what you will do if something goes wrong. In other words, what will you do in a financial emergency? As I mentioned last week, there are four general steps. Step one is spot the dangers. Step two is make a list of wants you would cut. Step three is make a list of the bare necessities you could cut. And step four is practice every year and also before any major purchase. Those are the four steps. Last week I got into step number one, which is spot the dangers. And generally, people know what you're talking about in your own life in terms of a vulnerable spot. You also have a tendency probably to look the other way, to minimize it, avoid it, or perhaps even deny it. And this could be in just about any area in your life that has to do with finances. It could be health, it could be work, it could be your relationship with your mate, and many other things which are looming out there, and there's some indications, some evidence, some indicia that something might be happening that is not too pleasant and frankly quite dangerous. And we need to look these things straight on. In fact, you have to look at those worries square in the face. But it's not to make it an obsession in your life. But what you need to do is to focus on what you can do to make things better in spite of that danger. I gave an example. Suppose there's some indication that your business employer is having huge strains and it's possible that you could lose your job. It could disappear. That may be a fact of life that's looming out there, but there are things you can do now to prepare yourself. One thing to do is to do online job hunting. Get a whole list of potential jobs out there for yourself. Look in the paper and start placing in your awareness some possibilities. Get your resume out, update it, dust it off, and send it out to a few places just in case. That's one example. Another example may be a health issue. In that kind of situation, it may be imperative that you get long-term care insurance if there is a serious health concern in your financial life. In other words, you need to spot the vulnerabilities and think about them now when you have plenty of time to take steps to protect yourself. If you see some real dangers lurking in your future, there is something else you can do now, and that is basically don't make it worse. Maybe you can't find a better job now, but you also know that it isn't a good time to take on new financial responsibilities like a new car loan or making a major plan to move and upgrade your home. Obviously, that would be a bad idea. The important response is always to take the time to review the possibilities so you can protect yourself just in case something comes up. It's very, very useful to jot your ideas down on a sheet of paper and include the possible vulnerabilities and your ideas for what you might do. Writing it down makes it concrete, and you can then think about it and discuss it to come up with a plan. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. We just did your emergency backup plan first step, which is spot the dangers. The second step would be to make a list of wants you would cut. This basically goes into the formula for our finances, and the wants are 30% of our net monthly income. If you've been following this program, this will make a lot of sense to you. So in terms of the wants you would cut, you have to ask yourself, well, if something went wrong, which quote-unquote wants would I cut first? Of course, the point here is not to get rid of wants spending right this minute. In fact, we need the wants. If you remember, the wants are that enjoyable, delightful phase in our life. So we want to keep those in as much as possible. So as long as you're working and everyone is healthy, you should keep enjoying your wants to the fullest extent possible. Being prepared, however, is the issue, so that if the need ever arises, you'll be ready to move fast. Now, this is where all of the hard work of this program and what you've been doing in following the steps in this program to get your money in balance starts to pay off. You've broken the credit card habit, and you've gotten really, really clear on what you need and what you can live without. So the bare necessities is what you need, and the wants is what you would like, but it has to be within reason. So you need to take a moment to think it through. What would you cut first from the wants? What would you cut second? So, for example, you might decide that at the first sign of real financial trouble, you would start cooking every night and skip the trips out to dinner. Or maybe you would need to get rid of the cable TV with 154 channels. Or maybe there's some more basic cell phone that you can get rather than these expensive plans. Ultimately, if things ever got really tough, you would probably want to cut out all of your wants. But as a starter, when things are being thought about and it's not something you need to do, think of the cuts that hurt the least so you're ready to trim if the need ever arises. It's also a good time to make sure that you can make the cuts. For example, if you could live without your cell phone, then make sure that you aren't trapped into a 2-year contract. Likewise, find out if there is a penalty for canceling your satellite dish. You need a little preparation right now, and so you'll be able to respond lightning quick if the need ever arises to deal with the wants. That's point number 2. Make a list of the wants you could cut. Point number 3 is make a list of the bare necessities you could cut. That's the third step in the process of financial CPR when things are getting really tough. You look for places where you could trim your bare necessities if you ever need to. Now that may sound crazy because there's nowhere left to cut. Of course, we're not asking you to make more cuts, we're just asking you to think about the cuts you could make if you absolutely had to. This is a time for creative thinking, to find some options. If things got really tough and you couldn't manage your bare necessities, what steps might you be able to take? For example, could you move in with some family member, your parents, your brother, your sister, your in-laws? Maybe just until you get back on your feet. Could you sell your car and take public transportation for a while? Could you pull the kids out of preschool or after school activities? Could you rent out the house and move into an apartment? Now, all these questions are for a very specific reason, because sometimes decisions you make now can preserve options for the future. So one example is a woman named Jessie. 4 years after buying her own little bungalow, she decided to remodel. Her builder tried to talk her into getting rid of the second bedroom so she could make a single larger master bedroom suite with double walk-in closets and a spa bath. He sketched out some pictures and he was trying to urge her to really go for it. But Jessie hesitated, deciding to keep the smaller 2 bedrooms and add a second small bathroom instead. Now, 7 months after the renovations were complete, and of course long before they were paid off, Jessie took a hard fall at work. Now, even with workers' compensation, she was out of money in 5 months and she was looking at 5 more months of rehab before she could return to her job as a nurse. How did Jessie respond to all of this? Well, she invited her mother to move in. It was really a godsend. Her mother drove her around, did the shopping, and helped out with the mortgage, the utilities, those kinds of things. Now, thinking back, if she had remodeled her house to fit only one person, that saving grace could never have happened. The bottom line is, think now about preserving your options. If you are in a situation where things go wrong, you may end up keeping some flexibility that could be important later on. The cuts area for bare necessities is very, very hard and very challenging and hopefully just an intellectual process, but we still need to make a list of possible cuts we could make if we ever need to. The thing to do is to create a list for emergency targets. We already spoke about some wants, the cell phone, the cable TV, the dinners out. It could be clothes. It could be things with entertainment. everything that has been in your wants category, you can look at and prioritize. Well, the same is true for the must-haves. Obviously, the must-haves or bare necessities, same thing, those need to be prioritized. And within the priorities, you need to find creative solutions. Housing, utilities, transportation, food, all of those things are critically important. But having thought about it in advance, putting it down on paper, and then perhaps going back periodically and reorienting yourself or prioritizing it in a different way is a useful factor in your financial CPR. And then you'll have a list of the wants you could cut and a list of the bare necessities that you could also cut if an emergency arose. The last point in the financial CPR is to practice every year and before any major purchase. In essence, once every year, set aside an hour to think about what you would do if your finances took a tumble. Pick a special day and put it on your calendar, and then do a little planning. Update your list of places where you would be vulnerable and make sure you've done your best to address them. You should also update your list of emergency targets so you're ready to cut your spending if you ever need to. It's that simple. Time and attention on the vulnerabilities. Once your CPR financial drill is over, file away the papers and put the worries out of your mind. Secure really in the knowledge that you have planned ahead and frankly have done your best. And then give yourself some small reward for doing the job, some treat because you really deserve it. It's really important not to be walking around with a black cloud over your head. What we're talking about is a sensible, positive action when you have time to plan it out. So you have to think of yourself as an optimist, frankly, with a parachute. That's it then. You practice every year and before any major purchase. So those were the four steps of your financial CPR. You simply spot the dangers, make a list of the wants you would cut, make a list of the bare necessities you could cut, and practice every year and before any major purchase your financial CPR. What do you do then when things really do go bad? Well, there are a number of points, and we'll start with an overview of those points this week, and we'll go into detail next week. First thing is you stay in control. Second thing is to react quickly. The third point is to call your creditors. The fourth is to pay the bills that matter the most. The fifth rule is borrow only as a last resort and keep it safe. The sixth rule is negotiate like crazy. And the last rule is if push comes to shove, call a bankruptcy attorney. These are all very important points of consideration if, in fact, the things have gone south, as we say nowadays. Once again, stay in control, react quickly, call your creditors, pay the bills that matter the most, borrow only as a last resort and keep it safe, negotiate like crazy, and if push comes to shove, call a bankruptcy lawyer. So we'll investigate each one of those seven areas next week and give you more techniques to help deal with your finances. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.